Hi, this is Nicole Hensoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. Today we'll be talking with Dean Williams, a computer scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, who's leading an effort to improve the network infrastructure for moving climate data around the world. Climate scientists require network connections that can deal with petabytes of modeling and observational data, which can traverse more than 13,000 miles of networks, if that helps put this into any kind of context. Dean, thanks for being on today.
You're welcome.
So you have an interesting background that spans both computer science and climate studies. Can you give us some details there and describe how these dual fields have shaped your understanding of this network problem?
Sure. So, yes, I've been in the computer science field for almost three decades. And during that time, I've been working with a number of climate scientists to understand climate change. And my role in this is to get them the data they need or the analytical tools they need in order to do their job. And to do that involves the network, particularly when you're talking about moving petabytes of data around the globe to other modeling centers or data centers, and also to the climate researchers themselves. So with this, we're working with lots of different institutions, universities, even private industry, in order to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. And your computer science background, was that specifically on the networking side, or were you more involved with the applications that climate scientists are using?
Yes, my background is primarily with the application side. And the applications would be applications such as how you develop diagnostics, different types of visualization techniques and algorithms when I first started working here at the laboratory, and other things along that nature of helping the scientists out. And then it kind of propagated into other things such as what's needed. So you fill in that role, that gap that's needed, and networking was a role that we needed to fill. So we started something called the International Climate Networking Working Group, and we call it ICNWG for the acronym.
Mm-hmm. And can you describe what types of challenges they're tackling there specifically? Most of our readers and listeners have a pretty good sense of moving a lot of data across constrained networks, so feel free to go into some detail.
Okay, so what we've done is we have something we developed for the past, I guess since 1999, we started on something called the Earth System Grid Federation. And this Earth System Grid Federation now, today, is composed of a number of what we call nodes that sit throughout the globe, in Asia, Australia, United States, and in Europe. And we're getting more nodes set up in South America and also in Africa. But in any case, we have these different modeling centers or data centers that's located throughout the world, and they're federated, which means that a scientist or a policymaker can log on to any one of these nodes through some sort of browser, we call them portals, and from there they can actually do like a Google search on the type of data they're looking for. So they're looking for temperature data or precipitation or albedo. They can do that, and it will show throughout the federation all of the data that they are looking for that particular search. And then from there, they can either download that data to their own facility and or do what we call server-side computation and analysis and visualization, so they can just do data reduction, just bring down what they need to see for their research. But to do this, particularly when we want to move data from one area to another for what we call replication and also for backup, right, we want to move petabytes of data between modeling centers. To do this, we need to have the network. And when we first started this, the network was very slow. So, for example, for Marcel, which is in California, to move data from California to the UK, we had a network speed of, say, 400 megabits per second. That's mm-hmm. not too fast. It will take us months to move a petabyte of data. And here mm-hmm. I'm talking about the data we have federated throughout the globe. Here we have, essentially what we have is we have tens of petabytes right now, and we're looking at having hundreds of petabytes in not too distant future. But to do this, what we're looking for is we need to have a faster and a consistent networking speed. And to achieve the type of movement of data, say I want to move a petabyte of data in, say, a week, we need to have network speeds of not in the megabits, but in the megabytes, but in the gigabyte seconds. So we're hoping to achieve through our network endeavors to achieve 2 gigabytes per second of data transfer throughput for the first year. So by 2015, and then by 2016, we're hoping to have between 2 to 4 gigabits per second of data mm-hmm. transfer throughput.
Okay, and so what's required then to get to that level? Can you give us a sense of what you're investing in? I know that there's a software side of this too, not just buying more buying more stuff, right?
Right. So the software is the Earth System Grid Federation. Again, it's the node software stack. So that's part of it. So in the software stack itself, we have a data component where you can just serve up data to the community if you're a data provider or a modeling center. We have a security part to that node, so I want to protect my data. There's an index node where you want to set up your own portal at your site. So if a user comes in with their OpenID or authentication and authorization access code, they can actually access data on your particular machine along with the federated data around the globe. And then there's a compute node. Again, the compute node is where you can provide the user with the ability to do data reductions and visualization, more analysis. So that's the software stack. So these mm-hmm. software nodes are located throughout the world. Now we need to have connection to each one of these nodes. And this is where the network comes in. And so with the networks, there's dedicated lines, there's routers, there's different types of other things that go on, DNT servers and front-end servers that we need to do in order to make sure that we have the right types of equipment in place and lines in place so we can get fast throughput. And to monitor mm-hmm. these types of throughput, we're using something called PerSonar, which lets us know how fast the network speeds are between each of these node sites. And that is going to help us monitor and keep a consistent throughput for our data transfer speed.
It's interesting that you mentioned PerSonar. We just talked with Brian Tierney, who's also there, who's working on that project. And he gave us some background on some of the challenges there. I mean, this is a pretty complex problem. I'm also curious to what extent there's a rip and replace expensive process that's in order here. What are some of the challenges just practically?
Yeah, so the challenges are we need to set up PerSonar each one of the climate and data node sites. And that's and PerSonar, we want it to run on a dedicated server by itself because it uses a number of resources in and of itself. So once we do that, then we have this kind of measurement that they can ping between different machines at the different sites so we can kind of find out if there's a failing between network sites or maybe a router is down or maybe someone needs to tune up one of the routers at one of the different locations. This will help detect and test that we would call this a test bed so we can actually figure out how we can improve the throughput of the data transfer speed.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of time investment are you looking at? When will a lot of this be implemented, and what's the road ahead for you?
Right, so we're hoping that we have the first at least a 1 to 2 gigabytes per second, hopefully by the end of sometime in 20 or FY14, I guess this year. Hopefully we're looking for something in the next 6 months maybe just to get a 1 gigabyte connection. But right now we're just trying to set up all the PerSonar software at all the different node sites. And the node sites we're looking at for right now, just to get this started, I mean, right now ESGF, there's over 50 different nodes around the country, but we're primarily going to set up the node sites with the major modeling centers or data centers around the globe, and the major modeling center or data centers are Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, we have the British Atmospheric Data Center in the UK, we have the Royal Netherlands Meteorological Institute, which is in Netherlands, of course, and then we have DKRZ, which is in Germany, and we have another one down under in Australia at the Australian National Center, or I guess it's NCI. I can't remember what NCI stands for, but I think it stands for their National Center Infrastructure. I believe that's what it is.
Okay. So it's very widespread.
Yes.
Let's just talk practically about the future here. So what will this faster network enable overall for climate research? I mean, what's the end goal here? Can you put that in perspective?
Yeah, so it's going to help us actually do backups. So, for example, one of the things that ESTF allows you to do is if you're actually taking a software stack, so you actually run your model, for example, and this model produces petabytes of data. And once it produces this data, instead of moving it all to one centralized location, what we want to do is we want to say, okay, it stays where it was produced, and then you drop this, you put on this ESTF node stack, and then what happens at that point in time, it gets harvested and federated throughout all the other node sites so folks, when they log on, can find it. So what we want to do at this point in time is that the most important data sets, which are the ones that are being used at a lot of in a lot of research, maybe it's 50% of that data or whatever, the most used data, we want to actually store that data at one of the five sites I just mentioned as backup so that others can go to that site and do other types of calculations or different things they want to do, but they know the data is going to be there for the long term. Now,
right.
When we do that, we're moving that data, petabytes of data, to those five sites, okay? And we also want to make sure that for these five sites, the data is up to date and consistent throughout the federation. So as a data provider, if I change my data, I now have to push that data not only indicate to or notify all the users that actually downloaded that data that the data has been changed, but also have to push this data to these other sites that actually what we call replicated that data at these federated sites. And so we're going to be
right.
pushing lots of data around this network in order to update it for backup and also to disseminate it out into the climate community.
Right. I can only imagine the challenges of the middleware environment there, not to mention the storage infrastructure. I mean, because you're gonna need to be able to recall this data pretty quickly, but only certain chunks of it, right?
That's correct.
Do you have any idea? Is there a consistent way of how they're managing that at the different centers? Is it a homogenous set of environments, or is everything completely different?
We try to set up a homogenous type of environment, but everything is different. Everyone has their own type of operating system they want to install ESTF on. They have their different types of storage. Right now, we have ESTF working on what we call rotating disk for fast access. Most of it's on that particular medium so that folks can actually grab the data quickly. But there are folks who actually have their data sitting on what we call treasury storage, long-term storage, or tape archives. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it takes a little while to kind of get your data off the tapes and then cache, and then you inform the user that the data is now available for you for them to either do computations or to download to their site. So you're right; it comes in all flavors, but we got to make sure that the system is robust. And then once it's there, then we have to push it through the networks in order to get it to its destination. So if you're interested in taking a look at some of the things we talked about today, you can actually go to our esgf.org site. And you'll be able to see the Earth System Grid Federation software stack. It's open source, so it's free for download and used for other types of science domain and other communities. And we also have another one called uv-cdat.org, which allows you to do analysis and visualization as well for the climate science domain. So if you're interested, you can take a look at those websites.
Very good. Well, Dean, thank you so much for sharing some of your challenges and developments there. Please contact us when you hit your mark sometime this year, as you anticipate, and we'll be glad to share that with our readers.
Oh, you're most
Thanks
welcome.
Again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time out to hear what we're doing and as far as moving data in the climate community.
Much appreciated. Take care.